I want to tell you a story that has two similar themes to what Dave's been talking about. One's about perspective and one is about going for a walk with unruly small children, but no dogs in this case. So during the school holidays, we took our small children, 3 and 5, on a bushwalk. We did the, I don't know if you guys have ever found the cardboard goblet. I know Jemima has because I was with her. But there's a little hut made of timber from a shipwreck, and it's behind over Mars Bluff and behind the dunes in Marina Bay on Bruni. It's super cool. And I thought it's a nice short bushwalk to do with our kids. It's really cool. It's a short walk if you get there at low tide. Otherwise, you have to walk up over Mars Bluff, and it's still a short walk, but not if you're 3 and 5. So when we got to the bluff, the tide was about halfway, and I was like, oh, look, it shortens it by so much. Just let's have a go. Let's have a go at getting around the headland, around the beach. And I thought, yeah, it'll be fine. It'll be fine. And actually, to get around that headland, around the bluff, you go through a series of like sea caves and tunnels that have been hollowed out by the ocean. It's actually really beautiful and really amazing. So we get into the first cave, and who knows Eleanor? Who's mates with Eleanor? Eleanor was full Eleanor. She's 3, and she's going, "Cool cave. I hope there's bears. Where are the bears?" And she's running about. She's like knee deep in water and she's splashing around and she's running ahead looking for all the bears. So she's rock scrambling. There's a bit of a decent swell coming in. So we're only kind of ankle deep water, but it was fairly constant because of the swell. Yeah, so cool and dangerous mean the same thing to Eleanor. That is the same word. So Jasper, who knows Jasper? Who's seen Jasper go full Jasper? You would have seen Jasper go full Jasper. Jasper is screaming. He is convinced that this is the moment that it all ends for him, that his parents, who are supposed to love and care for him, have brought me to this island to die. This is it. There were tears. There was screaming. There's like, I don't know if I've ever seen sheer panic on someone's face like I did that day. Like, I've never quite seen that before. And the water was knee deep. At one point, we turned around and we could still hear the shrieking, but the child from which it was coming had disappeared. I'm like, oh, that's not good. Perhaps the tide was higher than I thought. No, we looked right and there's no Jasper. And we look left and there's no Jasper. We look out to sea and we think, oh, good, there's no Jasper out there. The only place left to look is up. I look up. And my son, who is 5, nearly 6, has scaled a cliff and is up on top of a rock that is like 4 or 5 times his height. I struggled to get up there to get him down, but he had that like panic adrenaline thing and he's just like, in a matter of seconds, scaled this rock. He did not know how to get down, even if he wanted to, and he was going to live up on that rock forever as far as he was concerned, because the alternative was that water, and that water was too deep and too scary. Anyway, so I managed to literally talk Jasper off the ledge, literally, and I actually had to get up on the rock and bring him down on my back, and it was good. We thought at that point, you know what, perhaps we'll just walk up over the bluff. Perhaps it's not that far, and perhaps it's not that steep, and perhaps we'll just go up over the top. So we did that, because what's a few extra kilometres if that noise would stop, right? Since that walk, I've been continually, something's buzzing, reminded about the two perspectives that my two children exhibited. And it felt so pertinent to where our church is at, and to probably where a lot of us are at in our personal lives. I shared that story with my class coming into the new term, kind of like who's approaching the new term going, cool, I hope there's bears, and who's up on the ledge. But I think for us, when we're on the move, like literally and spiritually across the river, and we're taking possession of a new home and a new season, I actually don't believe God wants any of us to be dragged along on that journey kicking and screaming. Like, I don't believe that he wants our experience to be that whole, I don't want to go, I don't want to go, I can't do it, I can't do it thing. I truly believe that he wants us to enjoy this journey. And that it should be an adventure. It should be such an adventure for us. And I believe that what will determine whether we are able to enjoy it or not is whether or not we can actually harness that adventure perspective. And I know that not everybody likes the word adventure, and not everybody thinks of themselves as an adventurer. And in fact, in this room, not everyone is as excited about the prospect of huge change. And that's okay. That's all right. But do you know what? The change is still going to come. It's actually still going to happen. Whether or not you are resistant to change, we are still going to bulldoze this building. I'm sorry. Don't be too attached. So let's do everything we can to actually shape our perspective and to take on that adventure perspective. And I think the first step to doing that, number one, is that we actually have to acknowledge the perspective that we bring. Because there's a really big difference between getting from A to B and going on an adventure. I drive to work every morning. I do the same journey from Lauderdale to Kingston, and I don't consider it an adventure. The reason I don't consider it an adventure is because it's really predictable. I pretty much know which lights will turn red at which times. Sometimes I drive part like I'm at the lights next to the same people, even in the morning, and I don't know them, but we obviously have a pretty similar routine because we're stopped at the same lights at the same time. Like, I know when which parking inspectors are going to walk up Murray Street at what time. Like, it's that predictable. So I don't consider it an adventure because nothing's going to probably go wrong for me. It's not going to be surprising. And if something were to go wrong, I don't know if my first, if I were to get a flat tire or there was an accident in front of me and I was way late, I don't think my first thing would be to go, oh, what an adventure. This is amazing. I don't think that would be natural for me. And I think that we have to acknowledge that's okay, that it's not a natural stance for us. If we're going to take some responsibility for how we feel, we have to know how we feel. And it seems really basic, but I think it's not, because it's really easy for us to give attention to everything in our lives except for our emotional world. It's really easy for us to put a lot of attention on everything that's going on externally and actually shut off what's happening inside. And we tend to undervalue our feelings, I think. I think we tend to kind of go, well, they're not as important as our knowledge and they're not as important as our actions. Even though they can do anything from forming our thought patterns to actually raising our heart rate and affecting our health, they can be such game changers in our world, and yet we go, they can make our hair fall out. I want to pay attention to something that might make my hair fall out. But it actually takes real vulnerability for us to stop and acknowledge them, especially when the feelings that we do have don't match the feelings that we think that we should have. Do you know that in Australia, stress is the largest contributing factor to serious illness, like all serious illnesses? Stress is, and Jessica's nodding, so I have the, I'm being verified by a health professional over here. Our emotions actually change our bodies and they change our brains, but we can't always see it happening. The good news is that God always sees it happening. He always sees what is going on. Psalm 139, verses 23 and 24 says, "Search me, God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. See if there is any offensive way in me and lead me in the way everlasting." I think our first step in adopting an adventure perspective is to just stop, go before God and ask, you know what, how am I doing with this? How does this sit with me? How do I feel about a big change in my church world? How do I feel about the new job that I've taken on? How do I feel about this relationship and how it's going? How do I feel about the way that person spoke to me that day? God, what do you actually see when I invite you to take a look in my heart? If you come in and shine a light around, what do you actually see? Our God loves an invitation. He loves an invitation. He loves to be asked into a situation. And what I love about him is he always rewards our vulnerability with intimacy. Matthew 7:7, you guys all know this one. It says, "Ask and the gift is yours. Seek and you'll discover. Knock and the door will be opened for you. For every persistent one will get what he asks for. Every persistent seeker will discover what he longs for. and everyone who knocks persistently will one day find an open door. In James 4:7, it says, submit yourselves then to God. Resist the devil and he will flee from you. Come near to God and he will come near to you. Wash your hands, sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded. Grieve, mourn, and wail. Change your laughter to mourning and your joy to gloom. Humble yourselves before the Lord and he will lift you up. To me, these verses make it so clear that we need to be able to sit with our emotions honestly, to humble ourselves enough to be honest, to admit exactly where we're at. And that's the moment that God draws near to us, the moment that he's invited to. But the invitation is only authentic if our hearts are surrendered. All right, number two, we have to actually be ready to shift our perspective, the fun part. So honesty, of course, is a wonderful start. Being up front where we're struggling is an awesome first step, but if we don't move from that place, then we end up in a place of venting at God. And the thought patterns that we repeat over and over again when we're venting then become hardwired neural pathways and our framework for understanding the world. If our venting becomes our framework for understanding the world, we're in trouble. So if our perspective is one of fear, for example, and we acknowledge it, we acknowledge I'm living afraid, but we don't change it, fear then becomes how we experience life. If we are in a place of grief or in a place of suspicion or a place of mistrust or bitterness, those are all emotions and they are so important and it's not wrong to feel any of those things. But if we acknowledge it and we can't find a way out with God or through, they become how we experience life and we are built to grieve when things are awful. But we are not built to be people of grief, who live in grief. We are not built to be people who live in fear. That's not how we are made. If we get to the stage of acknowledgement but we don't move forward, we actually are inviting Satan to give us a new identity. If we go, this is who I am now, we actually invite Satan to come in and change our name. In Ruth 1:9, it says, this is the story of Naomi and Ruth, and bit of backstory. So Naomi is Ruth's mother-in-law. Her husband has died and her two sons have died and she's there with her two daughters-in-law and they've been left with nothing. And so they've actually travelled back to Naomi's hometown, Bethlehem, to try to find someone who will take care of them. And they just are broken women. The two of them continued on their journey. When they came to Bethlehem, the entire town was excited by their arrival. Is it really Naomi? The women asked. Don't call me Naomi, she responded. Instead, call me Mara, for the Almighty has made life very bitter for me. So Mara is a Hebrew word for bitterness. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me home empty. Why call me Naomi when the Lord has caused me to suffer and the Almighty has sent such tragedy upon me? So she has experienced the loss of a husband, two sons, and the grief is so real. And the response is normal. She wasn't trying to hide it. She was acknowledging it. She knew exactly where she was at. But she went a step beyond that vulnerability and she actually said, this is my name now. This is who I am. This is what my life will be. She'd adopted a perspective that framed who she was. And actually, also, if you listen to what she says, who God was to her. Everything about her life she then saw through a filter of brokenness. In Psalm 23 it says, Lord, even when your path takes me through the valley of deepest darkness, fear will never conquer me, for you already have. You remain close to me and you lead me through it all the way. Your authority is my strength and my peace. The comfort of your love takes away my fear. I love Psalm 23 because it models how the submission of our emotional world to God actually creates a way through our darkest valleys. it says, "Fear will never conquer me, for you already have." The only way that we can be unconquered by our emotional world is if we submit it, we surrender it. We are conquered by God alone. So something amazing, we're going to go back to my bushwalking story. Something amazing happened to my little boy when we managed to actually get him to stop screaming. He said, "Oh, don't worry, Ellie, there's no bears." I'm like, "Well, mate, way to miss the point. She wants the bears. She's all about the bears. Like, you don't know what's going on here." So she's all about the adventure. So rather than cling to his fear, he actually chose to run ahead and find a spot in a cave or in a bush to hide in, and he starts to roar like a bear because he wanted to give his little sister the adventure that she wanted. So rather than live in the perspective of fear, or even to discount it and go, you know, no, the bears aren't real, that's not a thing, even to shut down the emotional world, he then went, you know what? I can actually make this a better adventure for someone else. And he chose to buy into the adventure perspective. And it's actually up to us to take responsibility for our perspective as we face the changes in our life, in our church, in our families. It's up to us to move past our fear of the unknown and to adopt a position of joy and of hope. And it doesn't... joy and hope, by the way, are not emotions. Joy doesn't take the place of sadness. It doesn't take the place of grief. It doesn't take the place of fear. It coexists with those things because joy is bigger. It's not a feeling. Those things are big and they are feelings, but joy coexists with them. So we can have a position of joy and a position of hope while we still experience all the full range of those feelings. And it's up to us to surrender our fear at the foot of the cross and to take up the perspective of Jesus, who for the joy set before him endured the cross. Number three, and this is my final point. I'm not talking for very long tonight, which is okay with me. Something tells me it's okay with you guys as well. I was talking to them. They're over there being rude. Number three. The adventure perspective is one of purpose. Okay, so when I was preparing this yesterday, Simon and I were having a little like Bible story adventure off, like what's the greatest adventure story in the Bible? And there are some strong contenders. There are some really strong contenders. But I don't think, the one that I landed on, I don't think you can go past the Israelites' exodus from Egypt. It is such a cool adventure. In particular, the part where they cross through the Red Sea and God parts the waters. There are other great contenders like Paul's shipwreck. If it's got a shipwreck, it's obviously a cool adventure. Jonah's thing in the whale, very cool adventure. But I'm going to stick with the Israelites. In Exodus 14, and then Moses stretched his hand over the sea, and all that night the Lord drove the sea back with a strong east wind. Isn't it specific that it's even an east wind? And turned it into dry land. The waters were divided. And the Israelites went through the sea on dry ground with a wall of water on their right and their left. So I just want us to imagine that for a second. It's a nice little part in the chairs there. I'm just imagining a wall of water either side of that. It's over there. Oh, yeah, there's a wall of water just behind the front row there. And they say this building isn't holy. I'm sorry. Sorry about that. Okay, now I'm completely lost. Okay, so the Egyptians pursued them. And all Pharaoh's horses and chariots and horsemen followed them into the sea. During the last watch of the night, the Lord looked down from the pillar of fire and cloud at the Egyptian army and threw it into confusion. He jammed the wheels of their chariots so that they had difficulty driving. I don't know, but I think if there's a wall of water on the right and the left, most of the work around confusion is already done, but apparently not. Yes. Now I'm lost again. I've got to stop making jokes. They're not even funny. Okay. Moses stretched his hand out over the sea, and at daybreak the sea went back to its place. The Egyptians were fleeing towards it, and the Lord swept them into the sea. The water flowed back and covered the chariots and horsemen, the entire army of Pharaoh that had followed the Israelites into the sea. None of them survived. But the Israelites went through the sea on dry ground with a wall of water on their right and on their left. That day the Lord saved Israel from the hands of the Egyptians, and Israel saw the Egyptians lying dead on the shore. And when the Israelites saw the mighty hand of the Lord displayed against the Egyptians, the people feared God and put their trust in him and in Moses his servant. All right, so that's an adventure. It is a very cool adventure story, but it being a very cool adventure story is not the point and is not the purpose. And I want to talk about purpose tonight. We often talk about God bringing the Israelites out of slavery, right? Out of Egypt. We talk about them coming out of slavery, out of Egypt. But do you know what? That's actually not what he was doing. When Moses led the Israelites through the Red Sea, everyone's like, what? It's heresy. When Moses led the Israelites through the Red Sea, they weren't being led out of Egypt. They were actually being led into the Promised Land. Even though it wasn't that straightforward, even though they didn't go straight to their promise, even though it took longer than they thought it would, they weren't being led out of slavery. They were being led into freedom. God doesn't lead us out of things. He leads us into things. He doesn't want to drag us out of a familiar, comfortable situation where we know where all the leaks in the roof are and we like them that way. He doesn't want to drag us out of what we know for nothing. He's not leading us out of this building. He's not leading us out of this season. He's leading us into something new. 2 Corinthians 3:18. Whenever, though, they turn to face God as Moses did, God removes the veil and there they are, face to face. They suddenly recognize that God is a living, personal presence, not a piece of chiseled stone. And when God is personally present, a living spirit, that old constricting legislation is recognized as obsolete. We're free of it, all of us. Nothing between us and God, our faces shining with the brightness of his face. And so we are transfigured, much like the Messiah, our lives gradually becoming brighter and more beautiful as God enters our lives and we become like him. When we adopt an adventure perspective, we choose to believe that our lives are becoming brighter and more beautiful. And sometimes it takes such faith to look at what we're standing in the midst of and go, my life is becoming brighter and more beautiful. We are being transformed into the image of God. We are led deeper into the presence of Jesus each day. We are not led away from what we know, from what we love, from the things that we've built around ourselves. We're not led away from our security. We're led into the presence of Jesus. He leads us, the Bible says, from strength to strength, from glory to glory. He will not lead us out of a place of strength to abandon us. He will not lead us away from our glory days, as we sometimes think of them, to abandon us or to give us something that is mediocre or substandard. He doesn't lead us out of slavery. He leads us into freedom. I have one more piece of scripture for you tonight. It's from Numbers 13, and it's when the spies went to spy out, when they finally get to the Promised Land after all those years and all that adventure. They finally get to the Promised Land. At the end of 40 days, the spies returned from exploring the land. They came back to Moses. Actually, the band could probably hop up now, or maybe just Jemima. I don't know. Do whatever you guys want. I'm not in charge of you. This rug wouldn't be here if I was, just saying. They came back to Moses and Aaron and the whole Israelite army at Kadesh in the desert of Paran. There they reported to them and to the whole assembly and showed them the fruit of the land. They gave Moses this account. We went into the land to which you sent us, and it does flow with milk and honey. Here is its fruit. And when we read, here is its fruit, they brought back a bunch of grapes that was so big that they slung it on a bit of wood and two men carried it between them. So when they say, here is its fruit, they're not like, check out this apple. It's like, here is its fruit. But the people who live there are powerful, and the cities are fortified and very large. We even saw descendants of Anak there. That's a giant. The Amalekites live in the Negev. The Hittites, Jebusites and Amorites live in the hill country. And the Canaanites live near the sea and all along the Jordan. It's like that Fawlty Towers skit with the enemy is here, here and here. Then Caleb silenced the people before Moses and said, we should go up and take possession of the land, for we can certainly do it. Nothing that the other guys said was untrue. They were surrounded by hostile people. The cities were fortified and very large. The people who lived there were very powerful, and some of them were giants. No one's lying. Like, these spies aren't just making it up. And Caleb actually doesn't even disagree with them. He doesn't say none of that's true. He actually just says, no, guys, we got this. We've got this. And again, just like Jasper and Eleanor, these spies, 11 of them, and then Caleb, they're looking at the same situation. They have the same facts as at their disposal. They saw the same things, but their experience of those things, their emotional response to those things, their perspective on those things was shaped by how they chose to frame it. 11 spies came back from the promised land that they had been led for 40 years to experience, and they felt hopeless. They are closer than they have ever been to God's promise, and they feel hopeless. They feel powerless. They feel small. They feel uncertain. What they said was, we were as grasshoppers to the people in their eyes and in our own eyes. And you know what? They hadn't spoken to any of those people, so it really was just in their own eyes. One spy out of 12 saw victory. He saw opportunity. He saw adventure. And I wonder, as we look out at our week this week, as we look out at Monday, what's the report that we're giving? What are we telling ourselves? Are we looking at it with an adventure perspective? Where's our focus? Because I want to tell you that living life in the presence of God is actually the greatest adventure that there is. And let's choose to embrace our next season. And I've said ours a lot, and I've referred to our journey as a church a lot. But I know that what God is doing in our church, I don't believe that our church is a thing. All our church is a group of people who have chosen unity. All our church is a group of people who have said, you know what, we're family, we're doing this together. And God does something powerful in the church when he does something powerful in people. The church cannot have an adventure perspective. I can't do that for you. Pastor Dave can't do that for you. There is some influence there, but each of us chooses how we frame our world. What's your report? What's your focus? Let's choose to be honest and vulnerable before him and before each other even, and let him filter out those anxious thoughts and find the things that we need to begin to shift. Because I can guarantee that God is looking at your Monday. He's looking at your next season with an adventure perspective. He's not going, oh my goodness, Jen's just going to go to work again for another week. It's just going to be like last week. I can guarantee he's looking at my workplace and going, wow, what are we going to do here? What is going to happen here this week? This is going to happen. I've got plans. Let's begin to lift our eyes and see what he sees. One way or another, you are going to end up in your next season. One way or another, we are going to end up across the river in Moona. Are you going to go there kicking and screaming and I don't want to do it, I don't want to do it? Or are you going to be like, I hope there's bears, because I personally, I hope there's bears. Let's go get them.